Ozonics Killer Wins Podcast back again. Episode 48. I'm Cole Tanner.
I'm Nick Simon.
I'm going to give a disclaimer right up front. We are getting after it today.
Yep, I told Cole I feel like we're a big old bull in the PBR shoot.
Getting ready to start bucking, baby.
We're just waiting for that nod.
This is getting serious. I'm just sitting there. I'm like kind of eyeing the cowboy going, come on, buddy.
Yep.
Give her the nod. Pull that gate open.
Yeah.
So today we are talking about the stages of scent control.
Yep.
This is something that, this is a culmination of a lot of different information and stories and perspective that I've accumulated over the years. And I don't know why, but for some reason this last weekend, this kind of epiphany kind of happened. So we just got done with the Wisconsin Open Season Sportsman's Expo in Wisconsin Dells. We had a really great weekend there. You know, that's a great show.
Yeah.
We do that show every year. We don't do a ton of shows. Like I said, we've just done Harrisburg, Iowa, and Wisconsin this year. So we've really throttled back. And it's always fun going to Wisconsin. We actually were pretty fortunate this year. We had the opportunity to do seminars.
Yep.
And that, when we were in the seminars, we did seminars on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And on Saturday, we had 50 to 60 men and women in the seminar.
Yep.
And before the seminar started, I just asked, I'm like, hey guys, if you don't mind, raise your hand. How many are you using Ozonics? And about half the guys raised their hand.
Yep.
And I think as I gave the seminar and as the weekend progressed and just thinking back on that seminar that day, I just kind of had this realization about that. I think scent control really can be broken down into four stages.
Yep.
Stage 1, 2, 3, and 4. And everybody falls somewhere within those stages.
Yeah.
I feel like I just really, really saw that this weekend.
Yeah, it's I mean, from the seminar, but even just talking to people in the booth,
yes,
you just see a really wide range of just people and where they're at in their scent control kind of journey, you know?
It's funny because I've always known that, but I never had really kind of put words behind it, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And so I just started jotting some stuff down. And we're going to run through this. I think the idea is, if you're listening to this and you have a friend, a good buddy, a hunting buddy, husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever it might be, if they're a hunter, if they're a deer hunter, hunter in general, they are somewhere within one of these stages of this scent control journey.
Yep.
And, I challenge you to send this podcast to them. Because I think the idea behind this is to help people really understand where they are within these stages,
yep.
Help kind of define these stages, and then help them understand and give them perspective on where they're at and what else they could be doing or how they could improve what they're doing.
Yeah, kind of what the ceiling is almost.
Exactly, exactly. So that's my pitch before we start. And like I said, I'll mention this all at the end as well.
Yep.
Because I think that what I've started to realize is that when I have an opportunity to go to these consumer shows, and a lot of times in the booth, like sometimes I'll get a guy that walks up and he's like, all right, man, give me the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah.
And I do. I mean, I will really, I mean, where are you at? And I'll ask him, you know, do you use ozone? Do you not use ozone?
Yep.
What type of hunting do you do? And then I kind of cater that message accordingly.
Yeah.
And every once in a while you get a guy that's really at the very beginning and I try to walk it all the way through.
Yeah.
And I think when they start to see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel and they start to look ahead and they see up that hill of like, holy cow, that's what I could get to.
Yeah.
It really changes people's perspective.
Right.
So we're going to try to go through all stages. I've got a lot of stuff we're going to talk about. So I apologize in advance if I really get to rant here because I think this is really important information.
It is. Yeah. It's important information from an education standpoint, and it'll help you kind of realize too, like where you're at, and then it'll give us a chance to help you as well.
Well, not only that, but most importantly, if you grab anything from these stages and the information that we're going to talk about, it's going to help you be more successful.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the most important thing is what it all boils down to is the proof is in the pudding. And what it all boils down to is when you're in a tree stand in the fall, and when you get an animal on the downwind side, And if you start to really understand and define where you're at,
yep,
and why you do what you do and how you could adjust what you do to be more successful,
yeah,
it will translate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that I have seen that in my own hunting. We hear that from men and women every year on the phones. We hear them at the consumer shows. They buy and then they go, okay, this is crazy what this has done, yeah, for me. I wish I would have done this 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Definitely. So here we go. All right. Four stages. I'll run through the stages pretty quickly first. First, we have stage one, meaning no ozone. You're not using ozone in any way. You're just doing other forms of scent control.
Yep.
Okay. Stage two, you're doing ozone on your clothing, but you're not using ozone in the field.
Yep.
Okay. Stage one, no ozone, just scent control. Stage two, using ozone in your clothing and also probably using your other scent control.
Yep.
Stage three, you're using ozone in the field, and you probably have some other type of scent control system as well. And then stage four, you are full-blown on the ozonics in the field train. You are maximizing what you're doing.
Yep.
Okay? So stage one, no ozone, just scent control. Stage two, using ozone in your clothing and other types of scent control. Stage three, you're using ozonics, just getting into it. And then stage four, you are full blown. The train is going, ripping down the tracks.
Yep.
You're maximizing it. The interesting thing is when you look at these stages, and this is kind of the epiphany that I had over the weekend is again, everybody falls into one of those four stages. What I wish I would have done at that seminar on Saturday specifically is I wish I would have, when everybody raised their hand on which ozonics they use, what I really should have asked is those four stages.
Yeah.
Who are the men and women that are not using ozone, that are just using other types of scent control? Bunch of guys, probably half the guys would have raised their hand. Okay, everybody, you guys all sit over here.
Yep.
Who's using ozone in your clothing but and using other stuff but not using the field? Raise your hands. A segment of those guys, put them kind of in the middle. Who's started using ozonics, been using it for like a year or two? You, yep, guys are here, right to the right of the middle. And who is just lives and dies by ozonics, won't hunt without it every single day? Yep. Raise your hand. The diehards. You sit over here.
Yeah.
And break them up into those four stages just right off the bat.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like just the conversation within that and the questions that you would have heard and what you would have heard people say,
yeah,
that in and of itself would have been pretty electric.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. But the interesting thing is when you look at stage one through stage four, and I say this from experience, I haven't been using ozonics since I was 12 years old, right? Like there was a good chunk of time that I never used ozonics.
Right.
And so I say this from personal experience. You say it also from personal experience, because again, like you said, you've got really what, two seasons of,
yeah,
ozonics?
About two. Yep.
You know, and last year was not as near as in-depth and maximizing it like we're doing now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you kind of have a pretty clear understanding of stage one, stage two, stage three, and stage four.
Without a doubt. Yep.
Okay. So when you look at the four stages and you would look at the percentage of success when it comes to downwind encounters, percentage of success with downwind encounters. When you get deer on the downwind side, what happens?
They win you.
When you talk to guys in stage one or stage two, and they walk in the booth and you say, and we get them on the phone or we just meet them somewhere and you say, what happens when you get deer on the downwind side? Every single person says the exact same thing.
It is a unanimous answer.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's unreal.
And it's funny because you wouldn't think that you could trigger such a candid response, but
yeah,
you can.
Yeah.
What happens when you get deer on the downwind side? While you're listening to this, if you're the guy that's in the no ozone stage one or the ozone in your clothing, what happens when you get deer on the downwind side?
Get winded.
They wind you.
Yep.
They'll say, they win me. How often do they win you? Oh, sure. 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even, why would you ask me that? Yeah. A lot of guys are like, well, what do you mean? It's all the time.
Yeah.
Right? So when you look at stage one, your success or your percentage of success on downwind encounters in stage one is really 0 to 25%.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
You know, you'll hear me talk about this throughout the entire thing, and I'm mentioning this now is, I don't know where I heard this, but it's the 20-60-20 rule, meaning 20% over here are always going to completely hate what you're saying or disagree with you or, yep, are going to be very negative.
No matter what.
Or going to say no.
Yep.
20% over here are going to 1,000% agree with you, love everything you do, and are going to just give you a thumbs up and be super positive, mm-hmm. have great experience. 60% in the middle, that's what I'm worried about. There's always going to be outliers within these 20% on the side, but it's the 60% in the middle. And that's why I say it's 0 to 25. There are still outliers. There's guys that go out on public land every single year that are a non-resident, a resident, it doesn't matter. And they go out just on the first hunt, whatever it may be, and they shoot a 200-inch whitetail.
Yeah, exactly.
We see them on Instagram. I mean, those posts just blow up.
Yep.
There was a couple guys, and I don't know the guys, like a couple of non-residents that bull shot really awesome deer.
Giants.
Yeah, giants. Like, I don't know if they were using ozone or they weren't, but you hear that all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And that's again, that gets back. Oh, just bump the mic. That's where we talk about those outliers.
Yeah.
Stage one, 0 to 25% success on the downwind side. Stage two, using ozone on your clothing, but not using it in other ways. Usually that's going to be 25 to 50% success on the downwind side.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Yep.
Stage three, you're using ozone in the field. You've just started out your year or two in. You're going to see that 50 to 75% success on the downwind side.
Yep.
And then stage four, you are inferno. You are diehard. You're just primo, right? You are dialed in.
Yep.
You're going to see that 75 to 100% on the downwind side.
Yeah.
And that seems hard to believe. Believe me, I get it. I was there. You know, we stand at the booth and talk to guys. I tell everybody the same thing. What happens when you get here on the downwind side? Well, they win me. How often? 100% of the time. Okay, great. We've established you're in stage one.
Yep.
Here's the deal, man. I'm over here in stage four where you get winded 10 out of 10 times. I get away with it 8 out of 10 times. Not that I get away with it all the time. It's not 100%.
Yeah.
There's always going to be outliers.
Yep.
But the reality is day in and day out, season after season, I'm getting away with it 8 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
And that's really lines right up for this percentage of zero way over here on stage one and 75 to 100 over here on stage four.
Yep.
You follow?
Yep.
The interesting thing that also correlates when we talk about stage one, two, three, and four, percentage of success on the downwind side is also harvest success.
Yeah.
It's not a coincidence as a correlation between when you're not using any ozone and your successful downwind encounters is 0 to 25, your success is very low.
Mm-hmm.
When you're at stage two, your success starts to tick up a bit, but still it's usually that 25 to 50%.
Yeah.
When you look at stage three, all of a sudden that's when there's this huge jump and all of a sudden you start going to 55 to 75% success.
Yep.
And then when you start to really dial in what you're doing with Ozonix, all of a sudden now you're talking about the 75 to 100. And that's a true statement.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I remember when I was young going out deer hunting, and it's not that I don't go out deer hunting now and just have a rough day, you know, or miss or whatever, or just not see any deer or pick the wrong spot or bop-a-da-bop-a-da-bop, right? But I feel like I can get myself pretty close to where deer are or where they're going to walk by.
Definitely.
Put myself in that wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Put myself in a good position.
Yeah.
Do you follow me? When I first started, I didn't really know what I was doing. Plus, I wasn't using any ozone. So I got deer on the downwind side and it was over.
Yeah.
My success was very low.
Yep.
Do you follow me?
Yep.
And so it's interesting when you start to look at these stages. You start to look at your percentage of success on the downwind side, and then you look at your percentage of successful harvest.
Yep.
As you go from stage one, two, three to four, your success goes up. Your success on downwind goes up.
Yep.
You know? And so we're going to go through these different stages and really dive deeper into what that looks like.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is as you're listening to this, you're watching this, think about where you fall. And I'm going to try to kind of talk like, I mean, you're here, but I'm going to just kind of try to talk like I'm talking to the person that's really listening to this.
Yeah, exactly.
And just again, my disclaimer is I'm sorry if I come off right in your face, because guess what? That's just how I am. I mean, ask anybody that knows me, right? Yeah. Like I got one speed and it's 110, baby.
Yeah.
I am on or off. I am black or white. I have very little seeing gray.
Yeah.
Sarcasm right over my head. I am a literal guy.
Yep.
And so I'm going to throw it down here. So strap in. All right. Right?
Time to nod.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there's not even a sound effect to do. It's just all that's a true statement. All right. So stage one, being the guy that uses no ozone. And this was me. Guys, there was a lot of years when I first started bow hunting that, you know, I didn't do anything for the longest time. And then again, you know, we actually ran into a guy at the Iowa Deer Classic was the perfect example. And I feel like it's gotten, I don't want to say worse, it's gotten harder to understand and discern information, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a guy at the Iowa Deer Classic that was the epitome of stage one. And, you know, I feel like as time has gone on, and even in, gosh, like you said, it's been a long time since I first started hunting. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I'm just saying it as, like, as a fact. But I think the thing that's changed now is the information that's out there. It's just, I feel like it's so much more.
Oh, yeah.
And to be discerning on what you need to do, what you don't need to do. Like I said, we ran into this guy at the Iowa Deer Classic. I don't want to blow him up. He says he listens to every episode. His name starts with an A. Let's just say his name is Aaron. If you're listening, what's up, Aaron? How you doing? Little shout out.
Yep.
Little code shout out.
Yep.
Little code.
It's a code. Code name.
Well, code name.
Code name Aaron.
Yep. Code name Aaron. Yep. Anyway, so he walked up and he's like, man, I just like, I'm just getting into bow hunting and my wife hunts and like, gosh, I'm just trying to figure out like, what do I do? Like, do I saddle hunt? Do I tree stand hunt? Like, you know, it's like, what bow do I buy? Like, you know, and then all of a sudden then I could walk into a shop and then I start talking about scent control. And he's like, and you could tell he was just like, it was just like spinning.
Yeah.
I know the feeling.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I get that way with gear.
Oh yeah.
Don't I?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
I do too. I think we all do. Once you get to a certain point, you know,
don't get me going on something that I'm looking to buy. Holy cow. I go down the rabbit hole, right? I end up on a company's website, then I end up on the reviews, then I end up on YouTube, then I end up on Google.
Calling them directly.
Then I call directly to the company and try to act like I don't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
You know, see how they make me feel, see if I like the way they treat me and talk to me.
Yep.
Then I call my buddies, then I go through that whole process like three more times, right? So I get it. It's hard, you know? And you know, the interesting thing is, you know, the story that I always tell about when I was first starting out, it really, even when I started seeing ozone work, and then it kind of made me think back to when I started,
right?
I always used to think about my grandpa.
Yep.
And I've told this story a lot. It's called the Erase the Line story. When I was a kid, my grandpa taught me how to hunt. Well, my grandpa, when he was growing up, she's in like the 40s. 30s and 40s and 50s, deer hunting wasn't as big of a thing in Iowa. You did a lot of rabbit hunting. You did a lot of squirrel hunting. That was what you did.
Mm-hmm.
So when we used to go hunting, my grandpa would give me a bottle of Windicator when I was really little. It used to probably just be a bottle of like baby powder. But it's kind of funny now to see how this has all kind of come full circle. But he would give me a bottle of Windicator. And when we would go rabbit hunting, he had the gun. And I just kind of, you know, walked along and tried not to scare everything away. He would let me step up in front of him and he would let me puff the Windicator. And he taught me that whichever way that Windicator went, that was the downwind direction.
Yep.
He always described it as a line. And that was the line of where we had to try to shoot that rabbit before it got to that line. It didn't really make a difference on a rabbit, but all the hunting he'd ever done, you know, they didn't have scent control back then. It just went hunting like in the same close that they worked in, you know, like, you know, that was just the way it was. But if you didn't get an animal by the time you got to that line, you weren't getting them.
Yeah.
So I would puff that Windicator and he would ask me, what does that mean? I was like, well, there's our line. What does the line mean? Well, if we don't shoot a deer or shoot the rabbit or shoot whatever before it gets to that line, we're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And honestly, guys, I grew up with that line. I have hunted every day with that line, knowing where that line was.
Yeah.
Set tree stands based on the line, scouted based on that line. That line was a permanent part of what I was doing.
Yeah.
If I got animals on the downwind side, they winded me.
Yeah.
Didn't matter if I was walking in, if I was sitting in a tree stand, where I was going to go that day, I had to hunt the line.
Yep.
It was interesting because I remember back when I was in college, I actually bought a climber tree stand. I bought a Lone Wolf climber. I don't even remember. It was a sit and climb is what they called it back then. Okay. And man, I thought I was really starting to make a difference because I had, by then I had started to use like sprays and suits and stuff like that. But when I got deer on the down one side, they still winded me.
Yeah, exactly.
So then I started hunting out of a climber because all of a sudden that meant that, like I said, I was 18, 19, 20, 22. I was a poor kid. I didn't have any money, you know? So I didn't have the ability to buy a bunch of tree stands. So I saved my money about one climber. Well, that meant that I could hunt. I felt like I could hunt any wind.
Yeah.
You know, back then I always hunted what I called the right way, the right stand on the right wind on the right day.
Yeah, exactly.
And a climber allowed me to do that.
Yep.
You follow me? I felt like I could hunt that wind in my face.
Yeah.
I still had that line and I knew that I couldn't cross it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But at least I could kind of feel like I can manipulate that permanent line that was always there.
Exactly.
You follow? And so that was the way it was. Again, my success was always pretty low.
Yeah.
Because like, when it got to be the rut and I rattled or grunted or tried to call a deer in, he would come in and he would circle.
Yeah.
And even when I would sit that right stand on the right day on the right wind,
didn't matter.
When I got him on the down one side, it was done.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people experience in stage one.
Yeah.
Is they experience having to know where that line is and just knowing that there's not real much use of looking behind you because you're not going to see any deer there.
Yeah, exactly.
If that's the downwind side, like you're pretty much foobard.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So then I started moving into, and honestly, I really kind of feel like I kind of skipped over stage two.
Yeah, I did too, for sure.
I didn't, you know, my kind of origin story with Ozonics is I actually got to guy the owner of Ozonics on an elk hunt, Scott Elrod, the owner, our boss, years and years ago, he came elk hunting in Colorado, the place I was working. And I had heard about Ozonics, right? Like at that time I had a couple buddies in college that used it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I didn't feel like, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to keep hunting the wind. You know, I was just doing what I was doing. I felt like I couldn't afford it. I didn't see the value in it, right? I didn't believe in it. So I didn't buy it.
Yep.
So I start working at Colorado. Here comes Scott on an elk hunt. Well, when I used to guide, I always had two rules. Don't guide the guide, meaning you came on a guided hunt, so don't tell me what to do. And don't walk like an elephant.
Yep.
Just walk quietly. Don't break every stick. And just like, let me help you, right? Yeah. Like I'm, not that I know any much more maybe than the guy that I'm guiding when it comes to hunting side of things.
Yeah.
But guess what? I know the ground. I know where we're going. I know, you know, what these animals have done before. I know where we should try to get to. I know where the property lines are. You know what I mean? Like, let me guide you.
Yeah.
And so Scott, right off the bat, made it very, very clear that he did not. And I tried to explain to him, right, that we were going to try to hunt the wind on these elk, right? Like, it's a cat and mouse game, especially with elk. You talk about a deer coming out on the down one side. Elker, that is how they live and die.
Yep.
They will come in and they will circle to that down one side of that call. Even on a water hole, same thing. They'll come in, they'll circle to that downwind side before they walk in. It just gets so tough. And I explained that to Scott. I'm like, listen, we're going to have to kind of play this cat and mouse game. He made it pretty clear right off the bat. He's like, dude, I don't want to do that. I'm like, Scott, rule number one, you know? And so the first night, we're like, all right, fine. We tried to do it his way, kind of like, he was kind of like bucking me in the morning and like, you know, he was kind of getting frustrated on the way we were doing it. And I'm like, dude, it's just like, we're not going to just go at him. Like, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So finally, that first evening, we put him in a spot that the wind was always wrong in the afternoons. You just couldn't hunt there. The thermal would move up this ridge. The elk would be above. If you tried to walk in there, they knew you were there. They would not come down onto this water hole. They just wouldn't. Well, I could get up on a spot to see that spot. So I said, okay, Scott, walk down this road, get in that blind, set your Ozonics up, whatever you need to do, like sit till dark. Well, I sat up above him, watched him. And sure enough, dude, an hour and a half before dark here, I thought I saw something. I'm like, what the heck? That can't be. Here, cow elk walks out, another cow calf, raghorn bull, couple nice bulls, walk right into the water hole, go right down the water, drink, like nothing's even wrong. I'm like, what are you talking about right now? Like, this cannot be possible. And I told him, I was like, and I said it kind of like joking. I'm like, yeah, if there's any elk on the water hole, like I'll just drive down there so you don't bump them off. Like they'll run away from the truck. Like there's always vehicles out here, you know? So sure enough, I had to do the drive of shame and I had to go down there and pick him up. Well, Scott got in the truck and like didn't say a thing, you know? And we got about halfway back. I'm like, okay, all right. all right, give me your spiel. Like, so how would we do this? You know, I'm still super skeptical. Like, yeah. I was the skeptic of all skeptics. And if you know anything about me, I'm not a sugarcoater. So, like, I'm going to probably just tell you what I think.
Yeah.
So I was just like, listen, Scott, like, I just don't think it's going to work. Elk got bigger eyes, bigger ears, bigger nose. Like, it's just, I mean, I saw it, but I'm like, I still was skeptical. Dude, over the next like 5-6 days, he flipped my world upside down.
Yeah.
We were going at elk in ways that I had never gone at before. It was insane to see what you could do with it.
Right.
It was absolutely ridiculous. And it just, it really, you know, that was kind of my, the light bulb went on that I was like, holy crap. Like, this is going to completely change things for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
To kind of go back a little bit, I'm not sure how I got on that because I wanted to say something before that. But the interesting thing is before Scott came and when I used to guide, there would be people that would come with all sorts of different scent control perspectives and systems. And heck, dude, I remember a guy one time, he literally made a campfire like out in the yard and was smoking his clothes before we went out. Like, I'll never forget, like in Southern Colorado, like, fire is like, be careful. There's a lot of fire bans and it's just dry. And all of a sudden I go out and I see the smoke rolling past the bunkhouse. And dude, instantly like this just feeling of like warm. I'm like, oh no, you know? So I'm like running around the bunkhouse and I get around the corner and here's this guy woofing his clothes over this fire. I'm not even kidding. And it was funny because like when you're guiding, like you're just working all the time and it's like, dude, you just smell like a fart. You're like, I don't remember last time I showered. This is, you know, four elks worth of blood underneath my fingernails. Like, you're just like, you know, it's just like, you just smell. It's just like, it's hard, you know, like, you know, it's like, and then you're tired and it's like 2 a.m. and you got to get up at 4 and you're like, I guess I'm just going to forget to take a shower or whatever. Yeah. Like, just put my skunky clothes back on. But it's funny because that type of perspective with scent control had really come from my experience. And I always tell this story of, you know, I kind of skipped over stage two. In stage one, I was doing a lot of scent control type stuff, and I thought it was making a heck of a difference. But I'll never forget, at the time, I was just dating Tatum. We weren't married or engaged. But this was way before cell cams, when you used to have to walk to your cameras to check them. Like, you would literally have to, like, zigzag through the woods, and, like, you'd pull cards and switch them up before you go sit for the afternoon.
Yeah.
It's funny how to think that that's how you had to do it.
Yeah.
So, I was checking a cam, got up in the stand, was looking on the little card reader deal, and sure enough, I had this great buck on camera, and he was walking by in the morning. And so I hunted that night, and I got home, and I called Tatum, and I checked the weather, and I was all in a tizzy because the wind was going to be completely wrong for the next morning. And I was all mad, and I'm like, and she said, what's up? And I'm like, gosh darn it, like, I got this buck on camera, and I just can't hunt that stand. And she's like, well, why not? I'm like, well, if I go in there, that deer's going to win me. Like, I just can't afford to bump him. You know, like, the wind's completely wrong. And she's like, well, hunt it anyway. And I'm like, yeah, babe, I can't do that. Like, I can't, like, I'll never get a chance. And I'm like, he'll win me before he gets there. And if I bump him, like, I'll never see him again. And she was like, yeah, but didn't you go buy that suit like a month ago that cost you like $400, like that bibs and jacket and everything else? I'm like, well, yeah. And she's like, well, does it work? I'm like, well, yeah, it works. And she's like, well, then hunt the stand.
Yeah.
Well, I can't. And she's like, well, why not? I'm like, because the deer's going to win me. And she's like, but you just told me that it works. And it was funny because I was getting so frustrated. And she literally said, she goes, Cole, what's the definition of insanity?
Yeah.
Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. You follow?
Yep.
And the reality is, in that moment, I realized that it didn't matter if I gave an inch or a mile, I was still giving. What I realized is that my experience had taught me that when I got deer on the downwind side, they winded me. What my experience has taught me was that the scent control that I was doing now wasn't really working.
Right.
It wasn't really working.
Yeah.
You follow?
Yep.
And as you're listening to this, I would challenge you, even if you're the guy that's in stage three or stage four, why are you doing what you do now? I think a lot of people do scent control right now because they think of scent control as like building blocks, right? To try to stack them up to get over this hurdle of success, mm-hmm. right? And you hear people say, well, it doesn't hurt. You know, it's a system of all this stuff that accumulates together to add up to our success. Okay, I hear what you're saying. I understand that perspective. But for me, what happens when you get there on the downwind side?
Yeah.
They wind you. So why are you doing what you do? And that's what it's funny because I'll ask that question at the seminars. I ask that question in the booth. Man, people get mad.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's hilarious how they react to that.
Oh, it's like, dude.
It just stops them dead in their tracks.
Literally, it's like, and it's like the Matrix. They just like, there's like dumb look on their face. They're like, why do you do what you do, man? Like, why do you do it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand. I'm like, what don't you understand? Why do you do what you do? Why do you do sprays? Why do you do suits? Why do you do cover scents? Why do you do that type of clothing?
Yeah.
Why do you do it?
Yeah. And it's so funny because, you know, I'm the same way as you. I basically went from stage one right to stage three.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that I kind of think of, I've been thinking about a lot hearing you talk to people at the shows and whatnot is we're conditioned learners too.
Yeah.
And that's where my world got flipped upside down. The first time I was hunting with Ozonix, deer's coming down on the downwind side. I'm like, well, here we go. It's done. I'm going to get winded. Just walks right through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, before, you know, you get that mindset where it's like, okay, if the deer's on the downwind side, it's kind of over with.
Yeah.
And then you start using that Ozonix and you start seeing deer do things that you're not used to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And yeah, it's just,
and you do that and you have that mindset of, okay, if they get downwind, they're going to win me while you're still doing all that. So it's like, you're doing all this stuff and you know that they're going to get downwind and wind you.
Exactly.
It's just a crazy, a crazy deal.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I always joke about that. There's a bunch of marketing directors in the hunting industry that have got their feet kicked up on the desk, just drinking a Tata, loving life.
Yeah.
Because every year they go out and they make and they manufacture a bunch of stuff and a bunch of people go buy it. And then the next year they buy it again and they buy it again and they buy it again. And like, is it actually doing anything?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. The biggest thing when I talk to people and I say, why are you doing what you do? A lot of them just kind of sit there and looked at me with a dumb look on their face. The thing that I always try to explain, and I think this is really the meat and potatoes of stage two. You have to understand that there's passive and active scent control.
Yeah.
And I know that just sounds like something that we've conjured up, but think about it this way, okay? Passive scent control means that the effectiveness of it degrades very quickly. When you talk about sprays, suits, cover scents, clothing, whatever it might be, does it work? Yeah, it might work right at first. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
But the effectiveness of it falls off. It doesn't stay up here.
Exactly.
It just goes like this, and it goes like this, and it goes like this. Let's just even say that it did work at 100%.
Yeah.
The reality is that we're continually emitting odor. You follow me?
Yep.
Like when I worked in Colorado, I had an opportunity to work with a bunch of thermal imaging cameras. Man, geez, it's funny. I don't think any of us think about this. If you've ever watched a thermal camera and just watched the breath coming out of your mouth, watch the heat come off your head. You follow me? We are a human exhaust pipe.
Yeah.
Let's just say that everything that you were doing, which it doesn't, but let's say it did, worked 100% from the neck down. You're still breathing, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You're still continually emitting odor.
Breathing, sweating, you name it.
Exactly. And so, and that's just the stuff that we, sitting here physically, can like comprehend and see and look at and make sense of. Let's not even start to talk about from a molecular level.
Yeah, exactly.
It gets way deeper and way crazier if you go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Okay. That's passive scent control, right? The effectiveness falls off. It doesn't last. It doesn't work. You follow me? Even with Ozonix, we make passive forms of scent control. There's a lot of other companies out there, and that's where we hear so much of. It's like, well, I use ozone right now. I use ozone on my clothing. I use ozone in a tote or a locker or a closet or it's all ozone. There's this mentality that's all the same. Well, yes, ozone is O3, right? Yeah. It's not like they make different molecules of ozone. It's O3.
Yeah.
Molecular level, it does what it does. It comes in contact with something. It oxidizes. It stabilizes. It's changing the molecular structure of that odor, whatever it comes in contact with. But the reality is that, again, that's still passive forms of scent control. We are continually emitting odor, and that isn't actually helping you actively when you're out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we talk about active scent control. When we're emitting odor, this Ozonix unit is continually exhausting ozone to help eliminate that odor.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you produce this much odor or this much odor. It doesn't matter where it's coming from. We're exhausting that ozone on the downwind side.
Yeah.
And so the other story that I always tell about passive scent control, and I think this is really what starts to get people's wheels turning. We talk about why do you do what you do. The other example of passive scent control that I always talk about is, and it really comes back to what I used to do. And again, I never really was in the stage of using ozone like I think a lot of people are right now. There's a lot of people that are just using ozone on their clothing.
Yeah.
I kind of skipped right over that. But within that stage, I think what stage two is really that passive form of scent control. That's really where people are really churning in that passive form. And I always give the example of the types of passive scent control that I used to do. And I can name them off. It's a lot. All right. So years ago, I used to have a special washer dryer. I lived in a little house. A special washer and dryer for my hunting clothes. I had special shampoos, special laundry detergents, special dryer sheets. I had special towels that only got washed and dried in that washer and dryer that I would use for a shower. I had special soaps, special shampoo, right? Then I had special totes that all the towels and stuff went in. I had special clothes that were just for when I was at the house.
Yep.
Right? Then I had special spray that I would spray them down with at the house. Then I had special seat covers, right, in my car or truck at the time, right, to help eliminate odor.
Yep.
Or to, you know, just not gather odor. I had special bubble gum that I used to chew that like smelled like apples or something. You know, they'd say, what am I at? Now I'm at 11. Then I had, obviously you couldn't stop at a gas station, right? Every gas station was your worst enemy. You know, like you better have eaten at home and you better have eaten home before you took a shower.
Yeah.
You follow? And then when I finally get out to where I was hunting, then I had special clothes that I would put on the way to the stand. I had clothes that I wore just like in the truck. Then I had special clothes that I wore on the way in. I always dressed real light, tried to pack everything on my pack the best I could. Then I would spray everything down again.
Yep.
I'm at 14. Then I would walk into the stand. I would change my clothes again, finally to my hunting clothes. Right now I'm at 15, so my special hunting clothes. Then I would take my other stuff that I wore, put it in a special like Ziploc bag or a bag at the bottom of my pack, try to keep it. Then I would spray down again. I'm at 17 things before I'm sitting in a tree stand.
Yeah.
I remember you used to get these little wafers that you could connect on the top of your hat.
Scent wick.
Yeah. Dude, before that, when my grandpa first taught me how to hunt, we used to take trash bags, put pine boughs in a trash bag, put all of our clothes in there and just leave them in there all the time.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I only did it one time. I used skunk piss, like fox piss, like, you know what I mean? Like to try to, like mask my odor. Like I've, dropped that at the bottom of the tree stand, like put it on the tree behind you, like just stupid stuff. But the reality is that I do all those things and I get up in a tree stand and I let out a huge fart. And guess what happens? You're right back at square one.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if you give an inch or a mile, you're still giving.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
And I think that there's a lot of people that are caught in this repetitive cycle of scent control like that. They're just doing all these things. I say this at the seminars and guys sit there and go, yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's me right here.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, and they sometimes look at me and they're like, and I've heard guys say like, man, I do way more than that.
Yeah.
Like way more. Like that's pretty hardcore, but he's like, I will see that and match you this.
Yeah.
Right. And so, again, the idea is when you're in that second stage, it's just kind of this repetitive cycle, vicious cycle of just not really working. You may see your success go up. Will you see your percentage of downwind success go up? Yeah. But you're still talking less than 50%.
Yeah.
On the downwind encounters. You're talking less than 50% on success.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You really have to, what we always talk about, you've got to really focus on that right way.
Yeah.
Putting the right stand on the right day, on the right wind. You know, that's what you are driven by.
Right.
You know, and I remember as a young man watching outdoor TV and listening to other people and sitting at seminars at consumer shows like as a kid and hearing people talk about like, well, if I just don't have the right wind, I just went out that day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and that was just counterintuitive to me. I'm like, well, geez, guys, like I'm a young guy. I'm in college. I've got a part-time job. And then there's other guys that like me now I'm married. I've got 5 kids. I've got a full-time job. I've got commitments. I can't hunt every day of the season.
Yeah.
It's not about hunting like the right day. It's about hunting right now.
Yeah.
You follow me?
It's unreal.
I don't get to hunt. Like, oh, I'll just skip today. So you're telling me the right thing to do is not to go?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And like, I come back to that story about Tatum. And I just, when I finally realized like, wow, this isn't working. Like, what am I doing? Like, why am I spending this money? I stopped doing all of it.
Yeah.
I just wear, and you can test this right now. I do, don't I? I wear just regular deodorant.
We both do.
I just leave work on normal time. And if I want to go hunting that day, I just go hunting. Like, I just don't worry about it. I don't spray down. I don't do any of it. Yeah. Like, I just emit ozone on my downwind side. Because the reality was, is that when I got deer on the downwind side, it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
They winded me every time.
Yeah.
And so if you are in that stage too, really think about, why do you do what you do? Yeah. Why do you do it?
Yeah.
Why are you doing it?
Yeah, it's so funny too. I remember there was a guy asked a question in the seminar and he goes, you just put your clothes on at home, hop in your truck, maybe stop at Casey's, and you just go hunt and you just put that thing over your head. That's all you do. Yeah.
You're like, yep.
That's all we do.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Yeah. And I mean, and it sounds so counterintuitive to people.
Yeah.
And I get it.
It's almost like it sounds like it's too good to be true almost for some guys.
Yes. You know? Yes. Well, dude, that's like when I worked in Colorado, I got to go and video hunts all around the country. We would hunt in Iowa, Kansas, Illinois, Indiana. And it'd be the middle of the day if we were doing like a morning and afternoon set. And we would be like, so where are we going for lunch? And guys would be like, well, what do you mean? Like, well, is there a cafe around? Like, and they were like, yeah, there's a cafe. We're not going there. And I was like, we're like, well, why not? Like, you guys have your hunting clothes on. We're like, yeah, we don't care. They couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It would always lead to talking about Ozonix.
Yeah.
Because they're like, how can you go for lunch? Like, that's... Why aren't you worried about your clothes? No, I'm not. We're not worried about it at all because we have an Ozonix. Like, that's what we do.
Yeah.
And it was just funny. People just like, it was like the plane just went into this tailspin. They were like, they just couldn't figure it out. It would just blow their mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you said, if you're in that stage, just start to really think about, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing what you're doing?
Yep.
You know, is it really working? Is there an alternative? Yes, there is. The thing that I always say as we move into stage three is this is where the difference really starts to make a difference.
Yeah, your eyes start to open.
Yep, absolutely. This is when all of a sudden you're going to be like, holy guacamole. There is a very clear and inherent advantage. When you look at stage one, two, three, four, if you just split that right down the middle and you're on the one or two over here, or you're on the three and four over here, there's a very clear and distinct advantage that using Ozonix will give you comparatively to not using it.
Yeah.
Holy cow. It's a game changer.
Yeah.
Okay. When you start to use Ozonix in the field, all of a sudden things are going to start to change for you. When I was in Colorado and I saw those Ozonix work, for me as a hunting guide, I always looked at my job was to try to help a client get an opportunity. Mm-hmm. That was my job. It wasn't about success.
Yeah.
It was about opportunity, right? If we had five guys in camp and our success rate was 2 of 5, but our opportunity was 5 of 5, well, whose fault is that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, my job is opportunity.
Yeah.
And for me, when Scott left that hunt, I would not let him take those lines. So I'm like, you got to leave these things here. I'll wrestle you for them.
Yeah.
You know, because from my perspective, to be able to get animals on the downwind side and get closer to animals and get them on the downwind side, it was going to give me more opportunity.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So again, when you start to look at stage three, you start to run Ozonix in the field. Okay. The most important thing to remember, and this is where I think people think once they start running Ozonix, they're like, oh, we're good. Like, I'm good. I put it above my head and like, I've listened to everything you've said so far in stage one and two, and now I'm on the other side of the hill and I'm good to go. Well, not entirely.
Yeah.
Okay. Think about it like this. Like, if I went and bought a new compound and I tried to flip it upside down and shoot it upside down, guess what? It ain't going to work very good.
Yeah.
You can buy a Ferrari, but if you don't know how to shift the gears, You can grind them and find them, but you're not going to maximize the potential, the horsepower, right, and the speed that that car can give you.
Yeah.
That's exactly like Ozonics. You follow me? It's all about setup. And for the guys that are in stage three, that's really what I always focus on, is make sure that you're setting it up the right way.
Yeah.
Okay? We talk about height, direction, and angle. We always, in a tree stand, for example, we always want the unit 6 to 12 inches above your head, always pointing it in the downward direction, and then about a 30-degree angle down. Okay? Yep. We talk about that because ozone is heavier than the air, so it's naturally going to fall. We want to create, imagine it like a curtain or a waterfall. You could probably put a graphic up here that we have at the shows that shows that ozone coming out, and we want all of that, we want all of your odor to go through that wall or curtain of ozone.
Yep.
Okay? That's why we talk about above your head. Direction, we're not worried about you. We're worried about the odor coming off of you. You follow?
Yep.
I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes we see from people. And part of it is our own fault, right? Like if you look at it in a magazine, you see it in a commercial, the best way it looks advertised is right above a guy's head.
Right, exactly.
You follow me?
Yep.
But the reality is that's not how most people are hunting. Most people are hunting the wind in their face.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is if you just had it pointed just straight down over top of you, that ozone comes out, it's hitting your hat, it's hitting your clothing, it's hitting the tree. All this ozone is getting oxidized and used up before it gets in your downwind side, which means your odor is getting in front of it.
Yeah.
You follow? Exactly. Yep. So in that situation, mount it on the side of the tree, point it behind you. And then about a 30-degree angle down, meaning the harder the wind, the more you want to angle it straight down. So 30-degree angle normally, if it's above a 15-mile-an-hour wind, take it vertically straight down. In essence, on a windier day, we're trying to pour that ozone into your downwind side faster.
Yeah.
So it's all about setup. What I would say about a ground blind or a enclosed air environment, again, the biggest misconception is they just set it up above their head in a blind. We're not trying to treat the air in the blind. We're trying to treat the air leaving the blind.
Right.
All right? Meaning it's the air that's leaving the blind that's getting to the deer.
Yep.
So don't just set it above your head. Point it out that window that's in the downwind direction. If you can create airflow within the blind, let the air in and out. For example, if you're sitting in a blind now and the wind's in your face, if you could open a window on the backside, position that Ozonics right there, that's the downwind side. We can bottleneck and really force where your odor goes out.
Yeah.
Set the Ozonics right above that window so it's getting exhausted out of the blind.
Right.
We always talk about whether it's in a tree stand or a ground blind to make sure that we're not worried about you or worried about the downwind side.
Yeah, exactly.
We're about the odor coming off of you.
Yep.
Okay? You know, the other thing I would say that I always tell people that are getting into stage three and they've started to use Ozonics for the first year or a second year, especially the first year, I would say hunt the way you hunt. Don't do a thing different. Just do what you do. We always talk about, you heard me say it earlier, the right way, the right stand on the right day on the right wind. Just do what you do. Just exhaust the ozone on the downwind side and watch what happens.
Yep.
Because you're going to see what everybody sees. You're going to see it work. And then the light bulb's going to go on and the wheels are going to start to turn. I'll never forget when I first got back to Iowa after that fall, I was bound and determined. I actually had a small break in November and I was back and I'm like, oh baby, here we go. Like I know exactly where I'm going to take this thing.
Yeah.
And I had a big mature doe that walked out and I thought, okay, put this thing to the test. Like, is this really going to work? She got directly downwind, walked right through, didn't even move a muscle. Yeah. I mean, didn't check up, didn't stop, tense up. She just walked right through. I'm like, holy cow. And in that moment, instantly I thought, okay, what else can I get away with?
Yeah.
Now I'm going to start to really push this thing.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, this is giving me an advantage that I've never had before. I'm going to start to go in on spots. I'm going to start to kill these deer.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So the moral of the story on stage three is it's all about setup. It's all about setup in a tree stand. It's all about setup in a ground blind. And just do what you do. Exhaust the ozone in the downwind side and watch what happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's what stage three. And again, what you're going to start seeing is when we talk about those downwind encounters, that downwind success, before you were like for sure 50% and under, you know, for sure, 0, 25, 30%. You were getting wind the majority of the time. Now you start to get into stage three and you're 50 to 75% success on the downwind side, you're going to see your success in general go up as well.
Yeah.
You follow me?
Yep.
So again, now we jump into stage four.
Yeah.
stage four is where I think we all want to be.
Yep.
It's interesting because I think as we talk about this, I feel like you're like, yep, yep, yep. You've seen it at the shows. Now that we kind of like defining these stages, we have got a lot of guys that walk up in stage two. Not very many guys in stage one anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. I would agree with that. There's a lot of guys that they're kind of wowed at the fact that we can use the ozone in the field.
Yes.
They're just surprised by that kind of.
Yep. So there's not a lot of stage ones. There's lots of stage twos where they're using ozone on something, but not using it. We get a lot of threes that are you're a year or two into it. You know what I mean? But those guys in stage four, man, they stick out like a sore thumb. Don't they?
It's hilarious.
It's so crazy when the stage four guy walks up. And I mean, some guys like want to like almost grab you and like shake you. They're so excited.
It is awesome, actually.
Aren't they?
Let's sell these things.
Yes. I'll never forget the last 2 years at the Iowa Deer Classic, this guy walking up. And last year, he's a pretty fit, tall dude.
Tall guy.
Yeah. Looks like he could kind of put you in a pretzel and like punch you over the wall. You know what I mean? And he was just passionate about like, man, dude, I swear by these things. Yeah. He's like, these things like, I'll never not hunt with them. He's like, this has completely made a difference. Like, I've killed bigger deer. He was freaking out. And this year, he did the exact same thing. He's like, let's sell some of these things. Let's get some people in the booth. I'm going to start ripping on some people, you know? He was just like, ready to give it to him.
Yeah, just fiery.
Yeah, and like, he's like, I've shot how many, like, pile.
13 over 170 or something.
Yeah, a whole pile of these huge deer. Yeah. We actually had a gentleman this weekend. There was a guy standing there that was in stage two, an older gentleman. You know, he had used ozone on his clothing, but he never really thought about the field. And he was really going through it with me.
Yeah.
Every question he could think of. And this other guy walks in and you could tell right off the bat, boom, he's stage four.
Yeah. It was funny. That was one of those times like when Cole and I are trying to capture this stuff.
Yeah.
You could kind of tell by their demeanor a little bit if they know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I saw this guy walk in and I like ran over to the camera. Uh-huh. And then it was funny too because you were like.
Yeah. I'm like giving him the like, get the camera rolling right now.
Yeah.
And I just tossed him a softball. I'm like, so what would you tell a guy that doesn't have one?
Yeah.
And he just hammered it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, you know, I've shot this many bucks over 160, all on the dime one side. I won't hunt without this thing. I'll never forget. We had a guy that walked up one time at the show, and it's funny. I don't know why we haven't done more with this, but he goes, I'll tell you what, man. He goes, if this thing weighed 50 pounds, cost $1,000, and only lasted a year, he goes, I'd be buying two. And he goes, and I'd be sleeping in the garage.
Yeah.
Because they work.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't even care. He goes, I would pull a piece of luggage behind with me if I had to bring that thing out in the woods because that's what it does for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so true. And I think when you get into stage four, I think when you really get down to the brass tacks, when you talk to guys in stage four, which you always hear people say, and you hear me say this all the time, is maximizing opportunity.
Yeah.
Maximize opportunity. I'm hitting the table if you can't hear me. Maximize opportunity. When you really think about it, we all have the same amount of days to go deer hunting.
Yeah.
It's only November 7th, one day a year. You follow?
Yeah.
It's only October 31st, one day a year. It's only November 15th, one day a year.
Yeah.
And we all have that same opportunity to go out there and hunt. But it's what you do with that opportunity and if you're maximizing that opportunity. And I think when you talk to guys that are really on fire with ozonics, they are maximizing that opportunity.
100%, yeah.
You heard me talk about in stage three that when you see it work, the light bulb goes on and then the wheels start to turn. You know, I told a guy years ago at a consumer show, we were talking and he was on stage four and I said, yeah, you know, it's funny because he goes, when you see it work, I go, then all of a sudden you start to push the envelope. He goes, push the envelope. He goes, I lit that thing on fire and I'm stomping on it. He goes, I'm not pushing anything. He's like, dude, I'm pushing the envelope. I don't even have an envelope.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm done with that. I'm not pushing anything. He's like, I go, you know? And we talked about earlier, just like when I used to be on stage one and stage two, the fact of the matter is I felt like there was just days I shouldn't go.
Yeah.
Because hunting the right way meant not hunting that day.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the right stand on the right day on the right wind, that wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know? And I think what you've seen me do this year and what I have done in the past, I come back to the story of my grandpa. I talk about that line.
Yeah.
all of a sudden that line isn't so permanent. Now I'm starting to erase that line. That's what Ozonix has done for me. Now, and again, we had a guy at Wisconsin raise his hand. Same guy that you were talking about earlier. Yeah. Real, real cool dude. He came over to the booth. We talked for a long time. He raised his hand and he flat out, he goes, so you don't hunt the wind? You don't even care about the wind. Do you hunt the wind? He really wanted to pin me down on that.
Yeah.
So you don't hunt the wind? Yeah. And I said, here's the deal, man. Do I hunt the wind? Yes, I do. Do I respect the wind? Yes, I do. I already told you a story about my grandpa. I've grown up hunting the wind.
Yep.
I understand it. I know what you're trying to get at. Do I hunt the wind? Yes. But when it's time to go and it's the last week in October, the first 2 weeks in November, and I've got bucks on their feet during the day, I stop hunting the wind and I start hunting the deer.
Yep.
And he just kind of like, that kind of froze him.
Yeah.
I said, think about it this way, dude. Think about, and as I say this, if you're listening to this, think about your favorite piece of ground that you hunt. Everybody's got their favorite piece. I mean, even right now, you could think of, I know what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would say, if you were standing out there, you're thinking about it, you're looking at it on Google Maps, and I said, where do you set stands for the wind? Well, you already know that because you already got them all set there.
Yeah.
But then if I said, where would you set stands for the deer? They're different spots. You follow me?
Yeah.
And for me, that's what it's really turned into. For me now, when I go scout and when I'm looking at stuff, you were with me last summer. When I'm saying, okay, where do I set stands for the wind? Well, that's a great spot for northwest wind. We can get away with that, right? Or that's a little iffy. Where would I set stands for the deer? Well, he's going to come out right there.
Yeah,
you know. And what I'm saying is that when the time's right, I stop hunting the wind, start hunting the deer. You follow?
Yeah.
You know, I stop making every single decision based around the wind, and I start making those decisions based around the deer. Because for me, and I think what you hear people say in stage four is, I always talk about the rule of 10. Man, if I could get, and even as you're listening to this, think about over the last 5 years of hunting. If you could have 10 feet, 10 seconds, 10 yards, 10 steps, if you could just have 10 extra, what deer would you have harvested?
Oh, yeah.
Mic drop. I can't drop the mic because it's really expensive and I don't want to break it. But that's when all of a sudden you go, dang.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I think when we're at the shows, we hear guys that are really, really hardcore dudes that really understand it go, okay, now that's going to help me take to the next level.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would say that I think a lot of people that are in stage four that are really passionate and are having great experience with it, but they don't take into account is we talk about time and concentration. The more ozone that you're running, the more it's going to eliminate odor.
Yep.
Well, that seems pretty obvious, right? The more ozone that you run, the more odor you're going to eliminate, okay? And again, I won't say where we were at because I don't want to blow anybody up. We were at an event with a whole bunch of people there. This is years ago. And if you can't tell, this isn't the first time I've had this conversation.
Yeah.
Like, I've got this down pat. I can do it like with my eyes closed upside down. But I was at an event and I was going through this, and it was funny because somebody came up before the event and was like talking about using it in the tree stand. And then there was this other guy that started talking about like using the kinetic pack, using it on the way in and out. I thought, huh? And I was like, these guys all are hardcore like Ozonix users. I'm just going to ask. So I get in this little talk with everybody. There's a whole pile of people standing there and I say, hey, everybody raise your hand that's using Ozonix. Well, they're all Ozonix users. So they all like real proud, hold their hand up high. Awesome. Keep your hands up. Who's using... And I would ask, if you're listening to this, who's using it when you're in the field? Who's using Ozonix? They all raise your hand. Great. Who uses it in a tree stand or ground blind? Keep your hands up. They all keep their hands up. Who uses it on the way in and out from the tree stand? Keep your hands up. All but like four people kept their hands up. There was a young kid that was in this little talk, and he stands up. He's like, I run mine on the way in and out. I'm like, really? And he's like, heck yes, I do. He goes, my dad and I... And his dad was sitting there. You could tell he was so proud. That's funny. I can still remember this. He's like, heck yeah. He's like, I run mine on the way down. He goes, we had this buck that my dad, we had him on this CRP or like switchgrass field. And it was, the wind was completely wrong. And so we had our Ozonix and he goes, we literally held him above our heads and carried him. because we walked in on the wrong wind, carried him on the way in, running him. We got up in the stand, put him up in the stand, and he goes, towards dark, that buck walked right over and we shot him. And all these guys, hardcore whitetail hunters, you can just see the wheels turning.
Yeah.
You know, we had two gentlemen this weekend, been using Ozonix since like the HR100, since the metal box when it was like a boat anchor.
Yeah.
And he said, he goes, you know what? I never thought about that. I never thought about using it on the way in and out. You know, I always talk about, guys, think about like ozone like a dam and think about your odor like a river. Mm-hmm. If I have the dam all the way down, I'm blocking that water. If I lift that dam up and I let that water through, you're not putting it back.
Right.
You follow?
Yep.
You know, how we get in and out of our stands can be, if not, is more important than where we maybe sit that day. You follow?
Yep.
Sometimes I maybe have to give up part of where I want to go to get back to that stand. You follow me? So if I can use ozone to help eliminate my odor from the minute I leave the truck to the minute I get back, why wouldn't you be doing that?
Right.
And that's where I think the guys in level four, don't think you're the old dog that you can't teach new tricks. There's still things that you can be doing to really maximize that opportunity. We always talk about maximizing that opportunity.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
You follow?
Yeah.
So again, those are the four stages. Stage one, meaning no ozone, no anything. Stage two, you're using ozone on your clothing. Stage three, you're really starting to use Ozonix. And stage four, you're trying to really maximize.
Yep.
So the idea behind this is, if you're listening to this and you have somebody that's out there, you've got a friend or somebody that's maybe on the fence, send this to them, have them take a listen.
Yeah.
And also, if you're listening to this, think about what stage you're in and define where do you fall.
Yeah.
Because I think when you define where you fall within the stages, it first will just give you, I think, a ton of perspective.
Yeah.
But it can also show you where you need to go.
Yeah.
And what you could be doing and how you can maximize and how you can become more successful.
Yeah.
Because if we can get animals on the downwind side, we are going to kill more animals.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Our harvest success rate is going to go up.
Right.
Okay. All right. So the other thing I wanted to talk about with this, and it's kind of funny because I had this epiphany yesterday. I was jotting all this down to talk about this today. And you came into my office and you were like, hey, what do we do a podcast on? What are we going to talk about? And I was jotting all this down. And it's interesting because there are still so many people out there that don't use Ozonix.
Mm-hmm.
The stage four guys, that's the other thing that you hear those guys say is they look at us and like we heard that last weekend. They're like, man, how are people not using this thing?
Yeah.
Like, how are people not using it? Do they understand what they're missing out on? Like, do they understand? Like, it's crazy. And I'm like, believe me, dude, I almost feel desensitized to it because we do. We have people at the consumer shows that just walk by. And I think sometimes they think that there's like an invisible wall where the carpet stops and the aisle starts.
Yeah.
Like we can't hear them
yeah.
walk by and go, oh yeah, I've looked at that. I don't think it works.
Yeah.
I'm not paying for that. I'm just going to keep hunting the wind. I would never use that. It's just like, man, dude, like you have no idea what you're missing out on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think what it really comes down to, it sounds, and this is the kind of the epiphany that I had, and it sounds so simple. And maybe this just makes me sound stupid, but people just don't believe.
Yeah. 100%.
They just don't believe. They don't believe that it works. And I don't know how to convince them, I guess. You know, and you know, this was said to me years ago. And the one thing that I will say, and I understand, when you look at scent control in general, just if you look at it, if you just look at sticker price, if you're walking down the aisle at Scheels and you see a bottle of spray for $12.99 and you see an HR500 for, you know, $4.99, I get it. You know what I mean? Like $12.99, $500. Like I get it. Meaning that belief, I think for a lot of people, is proportional to price. Belief is proportional to price. It doesn't take a lot of belief at $12.99.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of belief at $500.
Yeah.
I get that. Believe me, married, five kids, full-time job, trying to go on adventures and figure out ways to pay for it. I get it. I get it. Money is money. Some people got a whole pile of it. Others of us don't, right? But I get belief is proportional to price. But man, You know, it just blows me away. You know, I think about when you look, and I wrote this down here, when you talk about the different stages, let's just break it down into two sections, stage one and two, stage three and four.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you can start to really see where people fall. Just, and I mean, again, I'm kind of like stereotyping people here, but it's just the truth.
Yeah.
And I mean no, you know, disrespect towards anyone. I think you would agree with everything I'm about to say. I think avid Ozonics users would agree with everything I'm about to say, right? For whatever reason, the younger guy ends up over here in one and two, stage one and two. The older guy ends up over here in stage three and four.
Nope.
Let's just say old to young being 35 and under, 35 and up.
Yeah.
Right? Less experience ends up over here in stage one and two. More experience ends up over here in stage three and four. Which again, you would think that the less experienced person would look over here at what the experienced guy's doing and goes, okay, what is he doing that I'm not doing?
Right.
You follow me?
Yep.
You know, it's, you know, I think right now you see a lot of it. We see, especially the last couple of years, is saddle hunters seem like they fall into the one and two. Tree stand blind hunters seem to fall into the three and four.
You're right.
You know, Western big game hunters, stage one and two. Deer hunters, three and four. Spot and stalk. A lot of people don't right. think that you could ever use Ozonics for spot and stalk. And I would 100% disagree with that. We talk about time and concentration and,
yeah.
you know, but that seems to be, spot and stalk seems to be one and two. Sit and wait, you know,
yeah.
if you want to call it that, in a tree stand ground blind is stage three and four. Rifle hunters seem to be over here in stage one and two. Well, if it walks out at 300 yards, I'm already going to shoot it. Yeah, but let's talk about the downwind side.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, but bow hunters are stage three and four. Western hunts, a lot of guys, those guys are in stage one and two. Midwestern guys are stage three and four.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, even when you, like I said, we're talking about age here, experience, gear, style. You know, it's interesting how there's just so many people that just seem like they just don't believe.
Right.
Even to this day. You know, and I said that at the show, and we said this in the seminar. The one thing that I will say has changed. Years ago, we used to, and again, I shouldn't even say this. How am I going to say this the right way? Years ago, keep all that in there. Years ago, when I first started Ozonics in 2016, there was still that kind of mentality like, I don't understand how this works, you know. But I think Scott and Buddy really plowed the field of uncertainty, insecurity, skepticism. Everybody thought it was just complete snake oil,
yeah.
like smoke and mirrors. I felt that towards the beginning, but not near as bad as I think what they dealt with.
Yeah,
definitely. People just flat out, you're telling me that this is an invisible gas that I can smell, but the deer aren't going to know it's there. What?
Right.
You know, nobody had experience with it. Nobody had seen it work. Everybody thought it was complete tomfoolery. When I started Ozonics in 2016, there was still that there. I still had more people than people I knew that weren't using it.
Yeah.
There was still that like, well, how does this thing work? Like, I don't understand. Like, what does it do? Like, I don't know anybody that uses it. Like, da 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 da. Now, we don't hear that.
Right.
You know exactly what I'm going to say. Guys walk up. Hey, do you use Ozonics? No, I don't. What's the next thing they say?
My buddy's got one and he swears by it.
Exact thing everyone says. Man, I got a buddy that swears by it. Man, I got a buddy that swears by it. Do you use one? No, I don't have one, but my dad swears by it. My good hunting buddy, he swears by it. Everybody knows somebody that swears by it. Mm-hmm. We don't have the whole, I don't know anybody that uses one.
Yeah.
I don't understand what it means or what it does. What we hear now is I don't use one. I got a buddy that swears by it. Or I don't know how it works. I got a buddy that swears by it, and he told me I need to buy one.
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He says I'm missing the boat on this thing.
Yep.
Or the other thing we hear is, do you use Ozonics? Yep, and I don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Because I don't want my hunting friends to know. I don't want the guy on the next property to know, because guess what? He's bumping deer over to me all fall.
Right.
And I've killed bigger deer the last 5 years because I'm using Ozonics and he's not.
Yeah.
Let that sink in.
Right.
And I'm like, I always joke those guys. I'm like, all right, man, that's not like great for sales for us. you know what I mean? You know, like maybe yeah. throw the guy a bone, you know?
Yeah.
But we get that a lot. You know, the last thing that I want to kind of touch on when we talk about these different groups, whether it's based on age, experience, gear, style. When we get, like I was talking about earlier, when you get a stage three or four guy standing there and you get a guy over here in one or two. And again, I'm not trying to blow the guy up in one or two, but this is what I always kind of go to. And I think this is what I think really kind of gets people to go, dang. Well, a lot of this does, but this really too big time. And you know, I think you know where I'm going with this. I say, what happens when you get here on the downwind side? If you're the young guy, you're the less experienced, you're the saddle hunter, you're the spot and stock guy, rifle hunter, whatever it is, what happens when you get here on the downwind side? You're a stage one or two guy. What happens? I get winded. Okay. All right. How often? What percentage? Well, 100%, like all the time, 10 out. So you could say you get winded 10 out of 10 times. Yep. All right, man. First off, what we've established, what you just explained to me, is whatever you're doing right now isn't really working. Because when you get deer on the downwind side, they win you. Your experience has taught you that when you get deer on the downwind side, they win you. That's what happens. You agree with that? Begrudgingly, yes. All right, man. But now let's go through it. Let's go through a scenario where you get to go out with all your gear. And a lot of times you can see it. They wear it, right? Guy walks in, he's got a Sitka hat on. Okay, well, you probably got about 2 grand worth of Sitka camo, right?
Yeah.
Right? And let's even shoot it on the way low side. Let's say you got $1,000 worth of Sitka camo on. Okay? Let's say you've got a new Matthews lift, and you've got a whole quiver of Victor arrows and broadheads, and then you've got the quiver, you've got your sight, you've got your release, you've got your rest.
Yep.
Right. What do you got in a bow setup? Let's just say on the minimum, 2 grand in a bow setup?
Minimum,
now, yeah. Okay, let's just say that. Now we're already at 3 grand. Then let's talk about, especially these days, you know, it used to be you're a tree stand hunter. Well, now it's probably about 50-50, maybe 60-40, I don't know, 40-60 saddle hunters to tree stand hunters. So now you got what? Let's say $300 wrapped up in a saddle setup?
300, yeah.
Yeah, 300 in a saddle, probably another couple hundred in sticks.
Yep.
You know, so let's just say $500 in a tree stand setup. Now we're at 3,500. Now let's talk about boots. Let's talk about optics. Let's talk about backpack. Let's talk about your e-bike. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your four-wheel. Let's talk about your side-by-side. You know, let's just say that accounts for another $1,000. So before you walk in the woods, you've got, let's just make it a round number. Let's say it's $5,000 worth of gear that you walk into the woods with.
Yeah.
Okay? You walk out there, you set up in a tree stand, you rattle or grunt, buck comes in. What happens when he circles down on the what happens when he circles on the downwind side?
Wins you.
All the stuff you carried, like bow hunting especially, is a sport of close. We're trying to get closer to animals.
Yeah.
And the reality is that it doesn't matter. And again, I'm not trying to throw shade on anybody because I use all the stuff that we just talked about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But what it really comes down to is, it doesn't matter what bow you're shooting or what camo you're wearing. When you get deer on the downwind side, they wind you.
Yep.
How many people do we talk to, especially when we're in Harrisburg, that are coming now? We're just talking about a resident guy. Let's say you're from out of state. Now you've put in for 5 years to come to Iowa.
Yep. All that money wrapped into tags and points and
Tags. You're going to hunt with an outfitter. Okay. Now you got another 5, 6, 7 grand wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
Between travel, hotel, yep, tip, outfitter fee.
Yep.
And then you had to pick a 5-day window, probably 1 or 2 years in advance.
Yep.
And you do all that. You get all set up and you get deer on the downwind side. And what happens? They wind you. It's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And what I tell people is, now listen, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go to Walmart and I'm going to walk in there with nothing from bow to boots. I'm going to buy all of it from Walmart. I'll even buy the bow from Walmart.
Yeah.
But here's the difference between you and me. I get to put an Ozonix above my head.
Yep.
And the exact same scenarios that you went through, I get to go through. And guess what's going to happen? I'm going to get closer to those deer.
Yep. Not at all.
And I think when you start to really chew on that, I don't know. I think you need to be running an Ozonix.
Yeah.
And I get it. I work here. Like, I know. I work here. This is called the Ozonix Killer Wins podcast. I get that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that It's all about maximizing that opportunity. And if you're not running Ozonics, you are not maximizing that opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and can you leave it to chance? And are there those guys that fall on that 20% on each side? Yes. But when you look at that 20-60-20 rule, think about your season. You know, 20% of the time, you are going to get away with it no matter what. It's just the way it works out. 20% of the time, you're going to win it every time. But what happens in that 60%, right?
Right.
That 60%, I think you can agree with me that you're going to get winded.
Yeah.
You follow me? And like, there's always those outliers, but man, I think when you really start to think about it, Ozonics is going to help maximize that opportunity.
Yeah.
And start to think about where you fall within those stages.
And why you fall in those stages too, I think.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. Why do you fall in there?
Yeah.
And what can you do if you all of a sudden you start to really look at that and go, wow, I never thought about it that way. I'm 100% right there in stage two. Or you know what? I thought I was doing a lot of things right. I think I'm really only in stage three. I need to set it up better. I need to start thinking about that.
Yeah.
Man, I need to think about, I'm in stage four, but I never thought about how I could hunt the deer, hunt the wind.
Yeah.
How that could change things. I never thought about how I could use it on the way in and out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how I can really squeeze. I've got this, it's like a washcloth full of water. How can I squeeze every little bit
right
out of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, once you get higher up on that hill, it gets harder. But I think some of these things that we're talking about can really, really change the game. So really take the opportunity, think about the stage you're in, and just think about how Ozonics can help you be more successful for the upcoming fall. Because again, it's March. I get that. But it will be October before you know it.
Yeah.
It will be, dude. It's crazy. Like, it feels so far away, but it's really not.
Yeah.
You know? And now is the time where it's crazy. A decision about Ozonics right now and how you can start to adjust what you're doing, how much it can make a difference when it comes to the fall.
Yeah, definitely.
Like we talked about earlier, there's a very clear and inherent advantage.
Right.
You know, so. Wow, that was a lot. If you stuck around for the whole thing, thank you so much.
Yep, we appreciate it.
That was a big one. But I think it's great because that really, in a nutshell, is the seminar that I give. And I feel like when we talk about that, it shows it really resonates.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And so I thought, you know what? Why don't we just talk about it here?
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people listening are already Ozonics users, but still, if you just so happen to catch part of this and you're in one or two, it can really, really help you.
Yeah, without a doubt.
All right, let's end it. I was going to say stage episode 48. Stage 48 in the books. Ozonics Killer Wins podcast. That's a wrap. Oh, one last thing. Public service announcement. We want to say thank you to Kelly. There's a gal named Kelly that works at Ozonics that is retiring.
Yes.
When this podcast airs, it's actually a sad day because it's the first Monday in the office without Kelly.
Yep.
If I had the do-do-do... Do do do.
We'd be playing it.
Yeah, we'd be playing the trumpet song.
Yeah.
Sad day.
We're gonna miss Kelly a lot.
Yep. Kelly, unsung hero.
Yep.
Perfect example of someone that just is a humble gal and just was really good at her job. She worked in the office. She's been in Ozonics for like 12 years. She works in the accounting side of things, making sure, like I said, all the invoicing and all the dollars and cents and everything. The bookkeeping on the accounts receivable and accounts payable and everything goes through every week. It was really, really fun working with her. And like I said, there's a lot more to it than just
this.
You know, this. Yeah,
yep.
A lot more to it. And Kelly was a big part of that.
Yes.
So thanks, Kelly. You're probably not listening to the podcast, but...
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly. So that's the last thing we're going to say.
Yep.
Episode in the books. Thanks for listening. Hey, if you're listening to this, turkey season is right around the corner, baby. It's probably less than T-minus 10 days away. It's T-minus 10 days. It's T-minus like 5 days away when this thing airs, because guess what? Youth season. This airs on Monday. Youth season opens on Friday. That's the wrong one.
Get ready, folks.
That's
it's
what
here.
We're going to be hearing. Jeez, we have to end it, because if we don't end it, we're going to start talking about turkey hunting, and it's going to be like 2 hours are going to go by, and I'm going to start seeing red again.
We're done.
Okay.
See you next week, folks.
Oh, we're not.